Canal des Deux Mers. Historical narrative. Bordeaux de Sète. 320 plus miles. September 2026. Introduction. The Canal des Deux Mers is not a pilgrimage route, a rail trail, or a modern recreational greenway. It follows one of the most ambitious engineering projects undertaken in Europe before the Industrial Revolution. For centuries, moving goods between the Atlantic and the Mediterranean meant sending ships around the Iberian Peninsula, a long voyage exposed to storms, war, piracy, and expense. In the 17th century, Pierre Paul Riquet proposed a different solution, an inland waterway crossing southern France. Supported by Louis XIV, the project became the Canal du Midi, later linked to the Canal de Garonne to form the Canal des Deux Mers. The journey begins in Bordeaux, a city whose wealth was built on Atlantic commerce and the wine trade. It ends in Sète, a Mediterranean port created during the reign of Louis XIV. Between those points lie medieval bastides, pilgrimage towns, Toulouse, and the former Pays de Coquin, Cathar country, Carcassonne, vineyards, river corridors, and some of the most remarkable civil engineering works in French history. This briefing provides the historical, geographic, and cultural context for that journey. What makes this route different? Many long-distance cycling routes follow ancient pilgrimage roads, former railway lines, or mountain passes. The Canal des Deux Mers follows a transportation system deliberately designed to reshape the economy of a nation. The Canal du Midi was conceived as a strategic and commercial project. Louis XIV's government wanted a secure inland route linking the Atlantic and Mediterranean without requiring ships to sail around Spain. Pierre Paul Riquet's solution demanded reservoirs, locks, aqueducts, embankments, bridge canals, and an elaborate water management system capable of overcoming the geography of southern France. When the canal opened in the 17th century, it was considered one of Europe's greatest engineering achievements. The canal transformed the regions it crossed. Grain from the Lauragais, wine from Languedoc, timber from the Pyrenees, and goods arriving through Bordeaux could move more efficiently across the south of France. Canal ports prospered, market towns expanded, and older river and coastal trade networks were forced to adapt. For cyclists, the result is a journey that changes character repeatedly. One day may follow a shaded canal towpath lined with plane trees. Another may cross open agricultural country, pass through a medieval bastide, or enter a fortified city shaped by the Cathar Wars. The route moves through regions with distinct identities rather than a single continuous landscape. The reward is a deeper connection to the journey itself. Rather than moving from one attraction to the next, riders experience the geography, history, and culture that developed around one of France's most important transportation corridors. Regions traversed. Ride Day 1 covers Bordeaux and Atlantic Aquitaine. Bordeaux became wealthy through wine, shipping, and Atlantic commerce. For more than three centuries, the region was tied to the Plantagenet realm established through the marriage of Eleanor of Aquitaine and Henry II. Under Plantagenet rule, including the era of Richard the Lionheart, Aquitaine was closely linked to England, helping establish the wine trade that shaped Bordeaux's economy and reputation for centuries. Ride Day 2 covers the Garonne Valley and Agenais. The Garonne Valley remains one of France's most productive agricultural regions. River transport, fertile land, and medieval market towns created a commercial corridor that continues to shape the region's economy. Ride Day 3 covers the Garonne-Tarn corridor. The meeting of the Garonne and Tarn rivers made this an important crossroads for trade, agriculture, and religion. Moissac emerged as one of the great pilgrimage destinations of medieval Europe. Ride Day 4 covers Toulouse. Toulouse is the historic capital of Occitania. Wealth from the woad trade financed many of the city's most impressive buildings, and the dye plant helped make the city one of the principal commercial centers of southern France. The rest day stays in Toulouse. With nearly 500,000 inhabitants, Toulouse is the largest city on the route. It offers southern French urban life, architecture, markets, museums, and regional culture beyond the canal itself. Ride Day 5 covers the Lauragais. Known as the Pays de Coquin, the Lauragais grew wealthy through grain production and the woad trade. Its geography also provided the water resources that made the Canal du Midi possible. Ride Day 6 covers the Upper Canal du Midi. This section contains some of the most impressive engineering associated with the Canal du Midi, a project often regarded as one of the greatest civil engineering achievements of 17th century Europe. Ride Day 7 covers Minervois and Cathar country. Vineyards, fortified towns, and Cathar history define this landscape. Ride Day 8 covers Mediterranean Languedoc. Languedoc is France's largest wine-producing region by volume. The region's vineyards, cooperatives, and wine economy remain central to its identity, even as markets and consumption patterns change. Ride Day 9 covers the Etang de Thou and the Mediterranean coast. Lagoons, oyster farms, fishing fleets, and maritime trade replace the inland canal landscape. This is where the Canal des Deux Mers reaches the Mediterranean world. Train Day brings the return to Bordeaux. Historical timeline. In 1154, Eleanor of Aquitaine marries Henry II of England, bringing Aquitaine into the Plantagenet realm. For more than three centuries, Bordeaux's fortunes remain closely tied to England and the wine trade. In 1209, the sack of Béziers marked the thousands are killed as northern French forces move against the Cathars and the independent-minded South. In 1229, the Treaty of Paris ends the main phase of the Crusade and greatly expands royal authority across Occitania, permanently altering the political future of southern France. In 1463, a catastrophic fire destroys much of medieval Toulouse. Much of the city seen today date from the rebuilding that followed. In the 1500s, the woad trade creates immense wealth across Toulouse and the Lauragais. The region becomes known as the Pays de Coquin, and merchants construct many of the grand buildings that still define Toulouse today. The blue dye produced from woad became one of the region's most valuable exports before imported indigo gradually displaced it. In 1666, Louis XIV authorizes construction of a new Mediterranean port at Sète, strengthening royal influence over southern commerce. In 1667, Pierre-Paul Riquet begins construction of the Canal du Midi. The project requires massive reservoirs, aqueducts, locks, and water management systems unprecedented in France. In 1681, the Canal du Midi opens, creating a navigable inland route between the Atlantic and Mediterranean and becoming one of the great engineering achievements of 17th century Europe. In 1856, completion of the Canal de Garonne creates the continuous waterway now known as the Canal des Deux Mers. In 1996, UNESCO designates the Canal du Midi a World Heritage Site, recognizing both its historical significance and its extraordinary engineering legacy. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Historical narrative. Ride Day 1, Bordeaux to La Réole. A marriage in 1152 shaped much of what appears on this first day. Eleanor of Aquitaine married Henry Plantagenet, the future Henry II of England, and Bordeaux entered a long Anglo-French orbit that extended from the Scottish border to the Pyrenees. Wine, grain, river traffic, and customs revenues flowed through Aquitaine toward English markets, and much of the region's prosperity was tied more closely to London than to Paris. As riders leave Bordeaux and enter the Entre Deux Mers countryside, they pass through a landscape shaped by that rivalry. Several towns along the route owe their form to English and French competition. Sauveterre de Guienne was founded by Edward I in 1281 as a bastide designed to strengthen English authority in the region. Crayon followed in 1315 under the direction of Amaury de Crayon, seneschal of Guienne. These planned towns were instruments of administration, taxation, defense, and control. During the Hundred Years' War, Sauveterre changed hands 10 times before French forces finally secured permanent control in 1451. The end of English Aquitaine is also tied to a figure encountered along the route. Pébert Lannes served as curate in Bouillac before becoming Archbishop of Bordeaux. After the final French victories of the 1450s, he helped negotiate Bordeaux's submission to the French crown, opposed several of the harsher terms, fell from favor, and died in exile. His story reflects the difficult transition from an English-oriented Aquitaine to a province increasingly integrated into the Kingdom of France. No product shaped the fortunes of Bordeaux more than wine. By the 19th century, the region had become one of the world's great wine-producing centers. In 1855, Napoleon III ordered a classification of Bordeaux wines for the Paris Universal Exposition, establishing a hierarchy of estates that continues to influence the global wine trade today. Then came disaster. Beginning in the 1870s, phylloxera, a tiny insect accidentally imported from North America, devastated vineyards across Bordeaux and much of Europe. The solution also arrived from North America. Scientists and vintners, particularly in Missouri, helped identify phylloxera-resistant American rootstocks and supplied millions of cuttings to French growers. European grape varieties were grafted onto American roots, preserving both Bordeaux's vineyards and much of the European wine industry. The day ends in La Réole, founded around a Benedictine priory in 977 and destined to become the second largest city in the province after Bordeaux. Its strategic position on the Garonne River made it one of the most contested towns in southwestern France. During the Hundred Years' War, armies repeatedly fought for control of the city. In 1345, Henry of Gramont, later Duke of Lancaster and one of England's most successful commanders, captured La Réole after defeating a larger French force at Auberoche. The town's history reflects the larger story of Aquitaine itself: wealth, rivalry, and centuries of competition between two kingdoms. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Historical Narrative. Ride Day 2, La Réole to Agen. A river made this landscape one of the most valuable corridors in medieval Europe. During the Middle Ages, the Garonne was one of the principal commercial routes of Western Europe and one of the greatest sources of wealth available to the English crown. Following the marriage of Eleanor of Aquitaine and Henry Plantagenet in 1152, the towns of the Garonne Valley became part of a vast Anglo-French realm. Wine, agricultural products, river tolls, and merchant traffic flowed down the Garonne toward Bordeaux and onward to England. By the early 14th century, revenues from Aquitaine rivaled the customs income collected throughout England itself. The strategic importance of the river explains why so many of today's towns became battlefields. Richard the Lionheart founded Marmande in 1182 as a fortified bastide designed to strengthen English control of the valley. La Réole, Aiguillon, and other river strongholds repeatedly changed hands during the long struggle between English and French rulers. In 1324, French forces besieged La Réole during the War of St. Sardos, a conflict that foreshadowed the Hundred Years' War. Two decades later, Henry of Gramont captured La Réole and transformed it into an English base for operations throughout the valley. In 1346, French forces committed as many as 20,000 men to the siege of Aiguillon, only to fail against a vastly smaller English garrison. The defeat helped derail French plans in the south during the same year Edward III won at Crécy. Not every treasure along the Garonne was military or commercial. One of the most surprising discoveries of the day hangs inside the Église Saint-Vincent at Lumadagenais. There, in a modest village church, visitors encounter Rembrandt's Christ on the Cross, painted in 1631. Few travelers expect to find a masterpiece by one of Europe's greatest painters in a small rural town, making it one of the most remarkable artistic surprises anywhere on the Canal des Deux Mers. The region's most influential export may have been neither wine nor grain, but a plum. Following the Crusades, Benedictine monks at Clay Rack introduced plum varieties from Syria and grafted them with local stock to create the emplum. By drying the fruit, they produced a durable, nutrient-rich food that could survive long voyages. Pruneau d'Agen became staples aboard merchant ships and naval vessels throughout Europe. Long before refrigeration, they traveled well, stored well, and helped prevent nutritional deficiencies during extended voyages. What began as a monastic agricultural experiment became the economic signature of the Agen region for centuries. Today's ride ends in Agen, where commerce, agriculture, and transportation converged for centuries. The city prospered because it sat astride one of the great commercial corridors of southwestern France. Wine, grain, river traffic, and the famous Pruneau d'Agen all passed through its markets. Long before riders arrived by bicycle, Agen's fortunes were tied to the movement of goods along the Garonne. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Historical Narrative. Ride Day 3, Agen to Moissac. Long before kings and governments exercised authority across southwestern France, monasteries helped organize the landscape. The most influential institution along today's route was Moissac Abbey. By the middle of the 11th century, the monastery had fallen into decline after centuries of raids, instability, and neglect. In 1047, Durand de Bradon, Bishop of Toulouse, intervened and placed Moissac under Cluniac reform. Under the leadership of Odillon of Cluny, discipline was restored, the abbey entered the rapidly expanding Cluniac network, and Moissac began one of the most remarkable institutional turnarounds of the Middle Ages. The monks did more than pray. In 1135, they founded Saint-Nicolas de la Grave as a sauvette, a rare form of sanctuary town where refugees, travelers, and peasants could seek protection from violent and unpredictable feudal lords. Located at the strategic confluence of the Tarn and Garonne rivers, the settlement combined monastic authority with military necessity. It reflected a broader medieval reality. Monasteries were often among the most powerful political and economic institutions in Europe. Rivers were the second force shaping the region. The Garonne connected inland towns to distant markets, carrying agricultural products, merchants, pilgrims, and ideas. Among the most successful exports were the famous prunes of the Agen region. Following the Crusades, Benedictine monks introduced plum varieties from Syria and grafted them with local stock to create the emplum. By drying the fruit, they produced a durable food that could survive long sea voyages. Pruneaux d'Agen became staples aboard merchant vessels and naval fleets throughout Europe, helping transform a local agricultural innovation into a product of international importance. Transportation repeatedly reshaped the fortunes of towns along the route. La Magistère prospered for centuries as a river port, collecting tolls and serving merchants navigating the Garonne. Then, in 1856, the opening of the Canal Latéral à la Garonne redirected commercial traffic and effectively ended the town's role as a major river port. Few examples along the Canal des Deux Mers illustrate technological disruption more clearly. A transportation system that had sustained local prosperity for centuries became obsolete almost overnight. The corridor also produced one of the most unexpected connections between France and North America. Antoine de la Motte Cadillac was born in Saint-Nicolas-de-la-Grave in 1658. After entering the service of Louis XIV, he crossed the Atlantic and founded Fort Pontchartrain du Detroit in 1701. That settlement became Detroit. More than two centuries later, General Motors adopted his name for its luxury automobile division. In 1970, the city of Detroit contributed funds to establish a museum honoring its founder in Saint-Nicolas-de-la-Grave, creating a lasting link between a small town on the Garonne and one of America's most famous cities. The ride ends in Moissac, one of the most important monastic centers of medieval Europe. Following the reforms of 1047, the abbey entered a period of extraordinary growth and influence. By the 12th century, Moissac ranked second only to Cluny within the vast Cluniac network, a federation of monasteries that stretched across much of Western Europe. More than 1,000 monks lived here at its height, administering lands, educating clergy, welcoming pilgrims, and exercising influence far beyond the Garonne Valley. Pope Urban II's visit in 1097 confirmed the abbey's status as a major center of medieval Christendom. The cloister constructed shortly afterward remains one of the finest surviving examples of Romanesque sculpture anywhere in the world. Its carved capitals and celebrated south portal rank among the masterpieces of medieval art. Today, the Abbey of Saint-Pierre de Moissac forms part of the UNESCO World Heritage designation recognizing the pilgrimage routes to Santiago de Compostela, known in English as the Way of St. James. For medieval pilgrims, arriving at Moissac meant reaching one of the great spiritual destinations of Europe. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Historical Narrative. Ride Day 4, Moissac to Toulouse. Few stretches of the Canal des Deux Mers reveal such dramatic contrast between human ingenuity and human intolerance. The day begins in a landscape shaped by rivers, canals, and the centuries-long effort to move people and goods more efficiently across southern France. That story reaches one of its most extraordinary expressions at Montec. Opened in 1974, the Montec water slope was designed to solve a problem that had frustrated commercial navigation for generations. Instead of guiding barges through a traditional flight of five locks, engineers created a machine capable of pushing an entire section of canal uphill. A floating wedge of water containing both the vessel and the canal itself was isolated between two moving gates and pushed up the slope by locomotives running on rails. The machinery became the first operational installation of its kind anywhere in the world. Although a mechanical failure ended operations in 2009, the water slope remains one of the most unusual engineering experiments visible anywhere along the canal. The route also passes through towns associated with a far darker chapter of history. In 1320, a teenage shepherd in Normandy claimed to have received a divine vision and inspired a popular movement known as the Shepherd's Crusade, or Pastoureau. What began as a crusading movement quickly evolved into a violent mob that moved south across France. Along the way, it unleashed a wave of anti-Jewish violence that devastated communities throughout France and Aragon. Castelsarrasin and Verdun-sur-Garonne were touched directly by these events, and Pope John XXII condemned the movement as it advanced toward papal territory. The Shepherd's Crusade was not an isolated episode. The corridor between Moissac and Toulouse repeatedly found itself at the center of religious conflict. Toulouse became the principal battleground of the Albigensian Crusade, the 20-year campaign launched by the Roman Catholic Church against the Cathars of southern France. Centuries later, the region again became divided during the wars of religion between Catholics and Protestants. Few areas of France experienced so many successive waves of religious upheaval. The ride ends in Toulouse, a city shaped by both conflict and reinvention. Over the past 8 centuries, it has served as a center of religious authority, a capital of Occitan culture, a seat of royal justice, and one of the world's leading aerospace hubs. Riders arriving in Toulouse may wish to celebrate with one of the region's defining specialties, sauce de Toulouse. Made from coarsely ground pork seasoned simply with salt and pepper, the sausage has been a staple of local cooking for centuries and remains one of the essential ingredients of the Cassoulet traditions that define much of southwestern France. Canal des Doumères Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Toulouse Rest Day. Few cities in France have reinvented themselves as many times as Toulouse. Over the past 8 centuries, it has been a battleground of religious war, a center of royal justice, a capital of Occitan culture, and one of the world's most important aerospace cities. The modern history of Toulouse begins with a conflict that reshaped southern France. In 1208, Count Raymond VI was excommunicated by Pope Innocent III for his perceived tolerance of the Cathars, a Christian movement considered heretical by the Roman Catholic Church. The result was the Albigensian Crusade, a 20-year conflict that combined religious zeal with territorial conquest. Toulouse endured multiple sieges. During the siege of 1217 to 1218, the city's defenders held out through the winter and repelled the Crusaders. Their commander, Simon de Montfort, was killed outside the city walls, one of the most dramatic moments of the entire Crusade. The aftermath transformed Toulouse. The Treaty of Paris in 1229 brought the conflict to an end and tied the region more closely to the French crown. One condition required Count Raymond VII to finance a university dedicated to theological instruction. The University of Toulouse, founded that year, remains one of the oldest universities in Europe. Just a year later, Dominican friars established one of the earliest papal inquisitions in the city. The procedures developed in Toulouse became the model for later inquisitions throughout Europe. Yet Toulouse was not defined solely by religious conflict. In 1323, local scholars founded the Consistoire del Gay Saber to preserve the poetry and language of the Occitan troubadours. Troubadours were traveling poet musicians who composed and performed in the Occitan language throughout medieval southern Europe. For more than a century, Toulouse became the leading center of Occitan literary culture. The city deliberately chose to preserve a regional identity through language, poetry, and music. By the early modern period, Toulouse had become one of the most important legal centers in France. The Parliament of Toulouse grew into the second most powerful judicial body in the kingdom after Paris. Wealthy magistrates filled the city with grand residences built from the region's distinctive rose-colored brick, helping create the visual identity that earned Toulouse its nickname, La Ville Rose, the Pink City. The city also produced one of France's most recognizable artists. Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec was born here in 1864 and became one of the defining visual chroniclers of the Belle Époque, beautiful era, the period between the Franco-Prussian War and World War I. His posters, paintings, and illustrations captured the nightlife, performers, and social world of late 19th century France and remain among the era's most recognizable images. Food remains woven into daily life here. Cassoulet de Toulouse and the city's celebrated sausage are enduring regional favorites, while Fainéant Tartare and candied violets reflect culinary traditions that stretch back centuries. In the 20th century, Toulouse reinvented itself once again. A city once known for crusades, universities, parliaments, and troubadours became the center of European civil aviation. Airbus established its headquarters here in 1969, and every Airbus model has been developed and produced in Toulouse. Today, the city is one of the most important aerospace hubs in the world. Canal des Doumères Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Historical Narrative. Ride Day 5, Toulouse to Castelnaudry. A murder in a castle changed the course of southern French history. On the night of May 28, 1242, a group of Cathars rode from Montségur to Avignon and assassinated a team of papal inquisitors staying in a local castle. The attack was one of the most dramatic acts of resistance during the Albigensian Crusade, and it triggered the final campaign against Montségur, the last major Cathar stronghold. As you leave Toulouse and enter the Loire Gay, you are riding through one of the most historically productive agricultural regions in France. For more than 2,000 years, armies, merchants, pilgrims, and traders have crossed this corridor between the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. The Romans recognized its importance and built the Via Aquitania through the region. In 1252, Alphonse de Poitiers founded Villefranche de Lauragais as a bastide town along this strategic route. Trade brought extraordinary wealth to the Lauragais. During the 16th century, the region earned the nickname Pays de Coquin, Land of Plenty. The name is commonly linked to the coquins, balls of processed pastel used to produce a brilliant blue dye prized throughout Europe. Before synthetic dyes existed, blue pigment was difficult to manufacture and commanded enormous prices. Pastel merchants became some of the wealthiest people in France, and their fortunes transformed the countryside. Churches, manor houses, dovecots, and grand estates appeared across the Lauragais, many of which still stand today as reminders of this remarkable agricultural boom. The boom eventually faded as overseas indigo, imported primarily from India, produced a deeper blue dye and eroded the market for locally grown pastel. Yet the region adapted again. Between 1667 and 1681, construction of the Canal du Midi transformed the Lauragais into the grain basket of Languedoc. Wheat moved east toward the Mediterranean and west toward the Atlantic. Towns such as Villefranche de Lauragais and Castelnaudry became essential collection and distribution centers within one of the most ambitious transportation projects in European history. One decision made in 1553 still influences regional cuisine today. Catherine de' Medici, a member of Florence's powerful Medici family who later became Queen of France, held the title Countess of Lauragais and encouraged cultivation of the Lingot bean, a variety well suited to local conditions. The crop spread throughout the region and became a defining ingredient of cassoulet, the hearty bean and meat stew that remains one of southwestern France's most celebrated dishes. Local legend claims cassoulet originated during the Hundred Years' War, when the inhabitants of Castelnaudry pooled their food supplies to sustain defenders during an English siege. Whether entirely true or not, the dish became inseparable from the identity of the Lauragais. By 1836, the first cassoulet factory had opened in Castelnaudry, and an official recipe followed in 1909, helping establish the town as the undisputed capital of one of France's most famous regional dishes. The ride ends in Castelnaudry, a town whose importance extended far beyond its size. During the 16th century, merchants arrived here from across France to trade wool and cloth. Its fairs became major commercial gathering places and financial centers, serving a wide region independent of nearby Toulouse. Today, most visitors arrive in search of cassoulet, but the town's deeper story is one of trade, agriculture, and geography. For centuries, whoever controlled the Lauragais controlled one of the principal corridors linking the Mediterranean world with southwestern France. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Ride Day 6, Castelnaudry to Carcassonne. Carcassonne exists because rulers, kings, crusaders, and armies understood the importance of controlling this corridor between the Atlantic and the Mediterranean. For more than 2,000 years, whoever held Carcassonne controlled one of the principal gateways into Languedoc. The fortress that dominates the skyline at the end of today's ride is the physical expression of that reality. The defining moment came during the Albigensian Crusade. In August 1209, a crusading army of roughly 10,000 men arrived before the walls of Carcassonne. The city was crowded with refugees from surrounding towns already devastated by the crusade. Water shortages, overcrowding, and the threat of starvation quickly became critical. Raymond Rogier Trencavel, the young Viscount of Carcassonne, attempted to negotiate with the crusaders but was seized during the talks and imprisoned. He died in captivity 2 months later under circumstances that remain controversial. The fall of Carcassonne marked a turning point in the struggle between the independent lords of southern France and the expanding authority of the French crown. The consequences lasted for centuries. By 1226, Carcassonne had become part of the royal domain. French kings transformed it into one of the most formidable fortresses in Europe. The double wall system visible today developed between the 13th and 17th centuries and eventually incorporated 53 towers. An attacker who breached the outer defenses still faced a second complete line of fortifications before reaching the heart of the city. The struggle against heresy did not end with military victory. Between 1245 and 1246, Dominican inquisitors summoned more than 5,500 people from across the Lauragais to answer questions about Cathar beliefs and suspected heresy. Lords, merchants, shepherds, craftsmen, and laborers all found themselves drawn into the investigation. More important than the numbers was the method. The procedures refined here became the model for later inquisitions throughout Europe. Religious conflict continued long after the Cathars disappeared. Nearby Mont-Saint-Puel became a Protestant stronghold during the Wars of Religion and successfully resisted Catholic attempts to subdue it. Yet the village also produced one of the most remarkable humanitarian figures in medieval Europe. Pierre Nolasc, born in Mas-Saint-Poel, founded the Order of Mercy in 1218. Dedicated to ransoming Christians captured by Barbary raiders, the order eventually helped secure the freedom of thousands of captives from North Africa and the Eastern Mediterranean. The ride ends at one of the most recognizable fortified cities in the world. What visitors see today is not simply a medieval fortress but a timeline written in stone. Roman foundations, Crusader fortifications, Royal French military architecture, and later modifications remain visible within the same complex. During the 19th century, architect Eugène Viollet-le-Duc devoted 26 years to restoring the crumbling citadel. His methods sparked controversy, but his work helped establish many of the principles of modern heritage conservation. In 1997, Carcassonne was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Nearly 4 million visitors now pass through its gates each year. The fortress that once stood at the center of crusades, royal expansion, religious conflict, and military innovation has become one of Europe's most celebrated historical landmarks. Canal des Deux Mers bicycle tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Ride Day 7, Carcassonne to Lézignan Corbière. Few episodes capture the brutality of the Albigensian Crusade more vividly than what happened to Braum in 1210. After capturing the town, Simon de Montfort ordered the mutilation of 100 prisoners. Most were blinded. One man was left with a single eye so he could lead the others to the next Cathar stronghold as a warning. Even medieval chroniclers sympathetic to the Crusade struggled to justify the severity of the punishment. The Corbière region through which riders travel today was profoundly shaped by that conflict. Before the Albigensian Crusade, southern France was a patchwork of independent Occitan lordships with strong regional identities and extensive commercial connections. By the end of the Crusade, the region had been drawn into the expanding orbit of the French crown. Political authority shifted northward, local rulers lost influence, and the cultural landscape of Languedoc began a transformation that would continue for centuries. The consequences extended well beyond battlefields. Throughout the 13th century, religious refugees, crusaders, clergy, merchants, and displaced families moved through the Corbière. Nearby Minerve became one of the most tragic symbols of the era. After a prolonged siege in 1210, roughly 140 Cathars chose death rather than renounce their beliefs and were burned at the stake. The event remains one of the defining moments of the religious conflict that reshaped southern France. Yet the Corbière story is not ultimately one of war. It is a story of adaptation. Medieval villages such as Puy-Chérique survived political upheaval, changing rulers, religious conflict, and economic transformation. Agriculture remained a constant. Grain, livestock, olives, and especially vineyards sustained the region through centuries of change. The Canal du Midi accelerated that transformation. Completed in the 17th century, it connected the Corbière to the wider markets of both the Atlantic and the Mediterranean. Agricultural products that once moved slowly overland could now travel efficiently by water. Towns throughout the region became more closely integrated into national and international trade networks, helping lay the foundations for the prosperity that followed. Wine ultimately became the defining product of the Corbière. Vineyards established in the medieval period expanded over centuries into one of the largest wine-producing regions in France. In 1985, Corbière received Appellation d'origine contrôlée status, formally recognizing the quality and distinctiveness of its wines. 20 years later, the creation of the Corbière Bitinac designation acknowledged an even higher tier of production centered near Lézignan Corbière. The ride ends in Lézignan Corbière, the commercial heart of this vast wine region. For centuries, the town has served as a marketplace linking growers, merchants, and consumers. Today, it stands at the center of the largest appellation in Languedoc, a reminder that the landscape surrounding the canal is not merely scenic countryside but one of the most productive agricultural regions in France. Canal des Deux Mers bicycle tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Ride Day 8, Lézignan Corbière to Capstang. Few rides along the Canal du Midi are more closely connected to the vision of a single individual than today's route. Pierre-Paul Riquet, the engineer and entrepreneur who conceived the canal, left his mark throughout this landscape. The villages of Parazza, Alms, La Saumerie, and Capstang are not simply places the canal passes through. They are places that exist in their present form because of decisions Riquet made more than three centuries ago. The story begins at Parazza. During construction of the Canal du Midi between 1667 and 1681, Riquet resided at the Château de Perrazza while overseeing portions of the project. Nearby stands one of the most important yet overlooked engineering works on the entire canal, the Pont Canal du Répoud. Completed between 1676 and 1680, it is considered the first canal aqueduct of its type in the world. Before its construction, engineers struggled with the problem of carrying canals across existing waterways. The solution developed here became a model for canal construction far beyond Languedoc and influenced waterway engineering throughout Europe. Not every story along today's route is one of innovation. Homs bears the scars of centuries of conflict. Originally a prosperous Gallo-Roman settlement known as Aldamus, it later became one of the most important commanderies of the Knights Hospitaller in southern France. The military religious order used Homs as a regional center from which it managed land, protected pilgrims, and supported crusading activity. Yet the village was repeatedly devastated by the same religious conflicts that shaped much of Languedoc. It suffered during the Albigensian Crusade and again during the Wars of Religion, reminders that southern France was often a frontier between competing faiths and political loyalties. The canal transformed Homs just as profoundly as warfare once had. What had been an agricultural village became an important canal port, linking local producers to markets across southern France. Grain, wine, livestock, and manufactured goods moved through a transportation network that for the first time connected the Atlantic and the Mediterranean by inland water. La Somme reveals another side of Riquet's genius. Today it appears almost impossibly picturesque, yet it began as a carefully calculated logistical solution. Riquet determined that canal post barges traveling from Toulouse should reach this point at sunset on the third day of their journey. The port, warehouses, inns, stables, and services that developed around this schedule were not accidental. They were part of a transportation system designed with remarkable precision. In 1787, Thomas Jefferson traveled the Canal du Midi and stopped at La Somme while studying European infrastructure. The future American president viewed canals as essential tools of economic development and later promoted similar improvements in the young United States. Food along this section of the canal reflects the region's long connection to trade and the Mediterranean. Anchoyade, a spread of anchovies, garlic, olive oil, and herbs, reflects centuries of commerce that carried preserved seafood inland from the coast. The unusual petit potato, paysannaz, combine sweet and savory flavors in a recipe traditionally linked to Indian cooks who passed through the region in the 18th century. Even local desserts such as creme catalane reveal the cultural exchange that flowed through Languedoc for generations. The ride ends in Capstang beneath the towering collegiate church of Saint-Étienne. Construction stretched across more than two centuries, producing one of the finest examples of Southern Gothic architecture in France. In 1906, the church received official protection as a historic monument. 90 years later, UNESCO recognized the Canal du Midi itself as a World Heritage Site. Together, they represent the two great forces that shape this landscape, faith and engineering. Canal des Deux Mers bicycle tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. Ride Day 9, Capstang to Sète. For more than 2,000 years, merchants, soldiers, and sailors searched for a way to connect the Atlantic and the Mediterranean without sailing through the Strait of Gibraltar. The final ride of the Canal des Deux Mers follows the route by which Pierre-Paul Riquet solved that problem. Today's landscape is the culmination of one of the most ambitious engineering projects of the 17th century. The challenge was not simply digging a canal. It was overcoming obstacles that many of Europe's leading engineers believed could not be solved. Near Béziers stands one of the most famous examples. The Maupas Tunnel, completed in 1680, became the first navigable canal tunnel in the world. Prime Minister Karl Baer halted construction when engineers feared the unstable sandstone hillside would collapse. Riquet refused to abandon the project. According to tradition, he escorted royal commissioners through the partially completed tunnel by candlelight to prove it could be done. The tunnel survives today as a monument to persistence as much as engineering. Just beyond the tunnel lies another masterpiece. The Fanzeron staircase locks rays or lower boats more than 21 meters through a sequence of 8 locked chambers and 9 gates. When completed, it was the most ambitious lock system in France and the showpiece of the Canal du Midi. It remains one of the most recognizable engineering landmarks along the route. The story of this region stretches far deeper than the canal itself. Béziers was the site of one of the defining atrocities of medieval Europe. In July 1209, at the opening of the Albigensian Crusade, Crusader forces stormed the city and massacred thousands of inhabitants, Cathars and Catholics alike. The brutality of the assault shocked contemporaries and established the tone for the religious war that followed. Four centuries later, Béziers produced a very different figure, Pierre-Paul Riquet, born here in 1609, whose vision transformed the economy of southern France. The canal's eastern approach also passes through landscapes shaped by much older civilizations. Agde was founded by Greek colonists more than 2,500 years ago, making it one of the oldest continuously inhabited towns in France. Established as a Mediterranean trading post by settlers from the Greek world, it linked this coastline to commercial networks stretching across the ancient Mediterranean centuries before France existed as a nation. Along the Mediterranean coast, the influence of neighboring Catalonia appears as clearly on the table as it does in the region's history. Dishes such as anchoillade and morue à la Catalan reflect centuries of trade, migration, and cultural exchange across the western Mediterranean. Even creme catalan serves as a reminder that the frontier between France and Spain has long been more cultural bridge than barrier. The ride ends at Sète, a city that did not exist when Riquet first imagined his canal. In 1666, Louis XIV authorized construction of a new port to serve as the Mediterranean terminus of the Canal du Midi. What had been a sparsely inhabited lagoon became a major commercial harbor. Riquet lived long enough to see the project nearing completion but died in October 1680, only months before his dream became reality. On May 15, 1681, a convoy of 25 vessels departed Toulouse and completed the first continuous journey to the Mediterranean. For the first time in history, goods could move entirely by water across southern France. In 1996, UNESCO recognized the Canal du Midi as a World Heritage Site. 20 years later, it received designation as an International Historic Civil Engineering Landmark. Those honors celebrate not simply a canal, but an idea that determination, engineering, and imagination could reshape the geography of a nation. Riders reaching Sète complete the final miles of a journey that began as one man's vision and became one of Europe's great achievements. Canal des Deux Mers Bicycle Tour with BikeTourFrance.net. September 2026. The Wrap. The Canal des Deux Mers is a land of extraordinary contradictions and exceptional people. For more than 2,000 years, this ground has been organized around trade, abundance, and ingenious solutions to seemingly impossible problems. The Canal du Midi connects seas that seemed permanently separated. Vineyards produce wines of international renown. Cassolet and Angkoyed encode centuries of agricultural mastery and maritime commerce with ties back to the Renaissance and Catherine de' Medici. The engineering that surrounds you, the locks, the aqueducts, the precise geometry of bastide towns, represents human vision reshaping geography itself. And it's 800 years old, much of it. But this same ground is also scarred by shocking violence. In 1209, Crusader forces massacred thousands of fellow Christians in Béziers. At Minerve, 140 Cathars chose death rather than renounce their faith. Jewish communities throughout the region faced systematic violence, massacres during Crusade fervor, forced expulsions from towns and entire regions, property confiscation, and legal disabilities that rendered them perpetually vulnerable. The Pastoureau's movement of 1251 turned particularly deadly, with shepherds targeting Jews as scapegoats for Crusade failures. Entire communities were erased, survivors fled or remained in precarious hiding. Religious intolerance and warfare reshaped the political landscape fundamentally. Villages rebuilt themselves repeatedly. Communities adapted. Agriculture persisted through upheaval that would have destroyed less resilient folk. These are tough people who are clearly born to it. This is not a contradiction to resolve. It is the reality of the place. The bounty and the brutality exist in the same soil. The paths we ride, the wine we drink, the food we eat, they all emerge from a landscape where human ingenuity and human cruelty have left equal marks. And yet, today it is peaceful, and the most violent thing we might witness is a car horn. Different cyclists find different reasons to love this journey. Some will be moved by the engineering brilliance. Some by the extraordinary food and agricultural tradition. Some will be haunted by the proximity to religious intolerance and violence encoded in the fortified towns and ruins. Most will experience all three. This is a powerful place. These 300 plus miles. Connecting with this landscape, truly seeing it and feeling it every day, moving through it, tasting it, understanding what shaped it, I believe will touch you, maybe deeply, and you will be richer for it. Thank you for joining us on our little journey across South of France. BikeTourFrance.net hopes you've enjoyed our program, and we invite you to visit us at www.biketourfrance.net.